Chinatown has dropped by nearly 40% since the introduction of this partnership with the county and the police bureau that gets people into treatment. We often find on the streets that those that are the most repeat offenders are either mentally ill or drug addicted or addicted to alcohol, or more often than not, a combination, an unhealthy combination of the three. Hopefully this catches them before they even have that confrontation with the police that would then direct them into some treatment program. And I too want to acknowledge what I see as a different tone from the county in terms of working with us on these important projects, and I appreciate it, Jeff. Aye.
Fritz? Well, thank you, Chair Kogan and Joanne Fuller and Ed Blackburn, for coming in today and for your partnership on this. Folks at home might be wondering why the city is paying money for ongoing services at a mental health service place when that's a social service traditionally funded by Multnomah County. The reason, as stated by my colleagues, is that we are responsible for housing and for police, and that there are many interactions. And by providing this service for a subacute center that will help people for 4 to 14 days, we're providing another option for providers to take care of people. And we are grateful to President Obama with his national health care, which will help fund this. I'm grateful to Tipper Gore and Vice President Gore for getting mental health parity at the national level so that we are sure that when we get national health care funding, that mental health will be covered. I want to recognize the bravery of the Oregon legislature for establishing the Oregon Health Plan, which frankly has helped us avoid getting into even a worse mess. Again, we're providing for, in Multnomah County, for people coming to get our services. And with Oregon Health Plan, we were providing for people coming from other states to get our services. Now with national health care, hopefully that will lessen the burden, and we need to figure out how to do that within our state for the housing and community services that are so desperately needed throughout our state. Thank you, Mayor, for your leadership on this and for focusing on addressing the root causes. We are looking at a whole range of services for people with mental illnesses and a whole range of solutions for our police and how they interact with people in our community. The Bazelon Project, which is working with providers at every level, is looking at what are the root causes and how can we address them. This won't take care of all of the problems. We still don't have enough acute beds for people in severe mental health crisis with medical issues. One of the reasons we don't have those beds is because we don't have enough capacity at the state hospital, and one of the reasons they don't have enough capacity at the state hospital is that there aren't community care facilities for people to be discharged once they're doing better, but who still need some monitoring. So this is not something that the City of Portland can do alone. We are glad to provide the final piece of funding, because let's be clear that most of the funding for this is going to be coming from insurance, and that the piece that won't be is going to be split ongoing between the city and the county, and I think that's entirely appropriate. And the more we partner in both the responsibilities and the funding, the more we will all see the benefits. Aye.
Adams.
Well, in addition to Chair Kogan and his team, I also want to acknowledge and thank Scott Andrews, Bruce Warner, and the team at the Portland Development Commission, along with the state of Oregon, who are partners in making sure that this happens. On my staff, Warren Jimenez, Tom Miller, and Kimberly Schneider. Appreciate their work. I can tell you on behalf of the police bureau that is desperate for more partners and more effective partnerships around folks facing mental illness. As police commissioner, we are very grateful for this. I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman, who's not here today, and Commissioner Fritz as well for their earlier work on the mental health action plan. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 902?
Extend special rates and charges for public works permitting services through fiscal year 2010-2011.
Hi.
Good morning.
How are you?
Just fine. How are you?
Good. Welcome back. Glad you're here. What are we looking at?
So, good morning. My name is Christine Leanne, and I manage the Portland Bureau of Transportation Development Services Division, and Lana Danaher is the similar position in the Bureau of Environmental Services. And what we'd like you to consider this morning is an emergency ordinance to continue essentially the ordinance that you passed in December of 2009, which establishes a special rate for public works permits. That ordinance was suspending the code essentially for a period of January through June. We anticipated that development permitting and public works permitting would pick up so that we would have good data to be able to set the rates for public works permits. That has not happened. And so what we are requesting is that the rates that are attached to the ordinance be put into effect for the entirety of this next fiscal year so we can continue to gather data and work with our outreach groups and their DRAC subcommittee to get good data. We have had 12 public works permits come in this year. That's it.
None of them have been completed yet.
Two have gone to 90%. So that's not enough for us and our working groups to be able to make decisions that are going to last a lifetime. So that's what we're asking for.
Mm-hmm. That's
all right. Any council discussion? All right. Thank you. This is an emergency. Has anyone signed up to testify for item number 902?
No one signed up.
All right. Please call the vote on emergency ordinance 902.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Thank you. Please read the title for emergency ordinance, item number 903.
Amend contract with MCA Architects PC in the amount of $60,240 to provide additional architectural and engineering services for the Fire Station 18 seismic upgrade and facility remodel project.
Thanks for waiting. Hi.
Good morning. My name is Connie Johnson. I'm the Facilities Project Manager for Fire Station 18 with OMF Facilities. What we're asking, well,
I'm Glenn Eisner with Portland Fire. I'm Deputy Chief at Logistics. Thank you.
What we're asking for this morning is we are amending the professional services contract with MCA Architects to include lead for the fire station. We'd like to pursue LEED certification. And this dollar amount, the $60,240, represents roughly $8,200 for an assessment, and then the remainder of it for the LEED certification effort itself. And so that's why it's coming at this point.
Great. Discussion from council. Commissioner Fritz.
I read in the ordinance that it includes a deck. Why do we need a deck on a fire station?
It's the deck on the back side that we'll do in a...
It's an area on the back of the fire station where the firefighters can have... Typically at fire stations, they have a barbecue or something like that to gather and to cook. At that station, it pretty much abuts the property line. And the only other place they have is the parking lot beside it. And so it's a way that the firefighters can have a place where they can gather and prepare their evening meal.
Would it be big enough for them to exercise? Because I have to declare that Fire Station 18 is my fire station, so I happen to know.
It's a very small deck, frankly, ma'am.
Oh.
It's just barely large enough to be able to have the barbecue area. We do have an exercise facility in the station.
Oh, okay.
They also grow a few tomato plants and things like that, so they can have tomatoes, lettuce, that sort of thing, so they can utilize those at the station.
That makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
And what's happening with the alternative site of Station 18 on Barber?
With the pardon?
The alternative site that was considered when you were thinking of moving Station 18 instead of fixing it.
We anticipate we're holding the property until better times, and hopefully we'll be able to sell and recoup the money.
I encourage you to hold it indefinitely until we get light rail on Barber, because I think it's part of the West Portland Town Center, and I think it could be a very valuable site for the city to have ownership. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. This is an emergency ordinance. Anyone wish to testify on 903? Carla, can you please call the vote?
Fish.
Thanks for your testimony. Nice to see you again, Chief.
Thank you, sir.
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you for answering my questions. Aye. Yeah.
Adams.
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for 904 and call the vote?
Authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process to procurement services pursuant to ORS 279C and PCC 5.34 and provide payment for construction of the Kelly Butte Reservoir Project.
Please call the vote.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
So I need to explain my vote here. I believe this vote is to do with two different issues and has been crafted so that we're looking at how do we do the contracting and also complying with the LT2 requirements from the federal government. So it's been alleged that the use of this alternative project process will save us money. We don't know what the actual cost will be, and there's a low-cost estimate of the $70 million. So it's very difficult for me to tell at this point whether this way of doing the contract is the better way to do it. There's no way of knowing whether we can will comply with the state law about favoritism because we haven't gone through the process yet. We expect it to be the case, as that's been the case before. I will be wanting some ongoing reports as to how this turns out. We can't show the cost savings yet. On such a big project, it's of concern to me that we're not bidding it out. But I do respect that staff recommends this is the way to go it, and I certainly know that we have to build this storage to comply with the LT2 process. I'm not convinced that this special process is a method that will provide us with cost saving or get the women and minority businesses that we want. I'll support this ordinance and will appreciate more data knowing if and how we're saving money through using this alternative contracting process. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 904 is approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote for second reading, 905?
Establish Green Bucks to solicit voluntary donations for the construction, maintenance, repair, and improvement of sustainable stormwater facilities located on public school properties within the city. Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 905 is approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance number 906?
Declare surplus property at 9 Water Bureau locations.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
I'd like to move a substitute ordinance. Count it out here.
David? Second. It's been moved and seconded to substitute the ordinance for the purpose of further consideration.
So let me explain the changes. The first change is on, now let me switch to my ordinance. 907. On the first page of the existing ordinance, I've asked that item A, that is the property on Cary Boulevard, be removed. I'm not persuaded that the Water Bureau has done as much due diligence as been needed to partner with the Parks Bureau in some capacity to allow this piece of property to be retained within the city. I've walked the property. It is a uniquely beautiful piece of property, and I think we need to make sure we've done everything possible to help Parks acquire that property. They currently, we pay the Parks to mow the property, and I'd like to see that partnership extended some way, if there's any way possible to help Parks keep that piece and acquire it from the Water Bureau. Second, I've had the I'll give everybody a copy of the my substitute, but me.
Okay, that's good. I just want to borrow over there.
I've had item C of the ordinance changed to read, proceeds from the sale of the property shall be deposited as revenue to the Water Bureau as to the water fund and shall be used to reduce future water rates. That was the intention of the original language. I wanted to clarify, to make that clear, so that there was no misunderstanding. And in a broader discussion, so that you can understand the framework within which this ordinance arrived, when I was assigned the Water Bureau in July of 2005, one of the things that I like to do is, when I'm assigned a bureau, familiarize myself not just with the people working there, but the various assets they may have. So one of the things I asked for, having grown up in Portland and aware that there's a number of Water Bureau properties throughout the city, was a list of the property owned by the Water Bureau. They had no such list. I thought that was interesting. Then I asked to meet with the property manager to see how the property manager knows where our properties are. They did not have a property manager. Thus, Tom Klutz, who is the first property manager in the history of the Water Bureau, and Tom's first job back in whenever year that was we hired Tom, was to September of 2005, was to do an inventory, which was not as easy as it might sound, of all the holdings of the Water Bureau within and without of the city. Once Tom did that, he compiled for me a two-volume book of and one page each dedicated to each piece of property with a picture and a description of the property and also whether the property is in active use, whether it could be active, or whether it's truly a piece of property that we have no use for. And so we began on the properties that the council recalls that could be used in the future, working with neighborhoods throughout Portland to create what are now referred to as hydro parks. So hydro parks were as a result of Tom's work and the inventory in terms of identifying active property and property that could be active fall under the category of property we do not want to dispose of. The properties we're considering today have been deemed by the Water Bureau as properties that will never be used to provide water service to the city, and thus properties we can sell. And with the exception of the one that I just learned actually could be appropriate for the Parks Bureau, these properties that you see up here have been identified as surplus properties. We would like to have the authority to sell them, of course, sell them at a time we think would reap the most benefit for the city, which probably would not be right now. But as they sell those properties and dispose of them, dedicate the funds to reduce water rates.
Mayor, I move the substitute ordinance.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded already, but I'm glad the enthusiasm is there for the following vote. Carla, can you please call the vote on the substitution?
Fish.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Substitution is approved. Further discussion, Commissioner Leonard? Gentlemen.
Well, I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Water Bureau. With me is Tom Klutz, the property manager of the Water Bureau. As Commissioner Leonard said, we have a number of surplus properties that we are slowly working our way through, getting appraisals for, determining whether or not they indeed are surplus, then going through the process identified by the City Council and the Code to determine that no other bureaus have a need or a desire to have those properties, and then putting those on the market to sell them so that we no longer have to maintain them and have the liability of those properties. So these now eight properties are the first properties that we've identified as truly surplus, where they have either been inherited by the Water Bureau, that's five of the properties, or are Water Bureau facilities that we no longer use and are out of commission, or as the Carey property is the only one of these, where we bought it back in 1978 with the idea that there would be a pump station there and eventually determined that there was not a need for a pump station. And as Commissioner Leonard says, it's a very nice piece of property along the gulch that the railroad travels through up in North Portland. So it will make a great park someday, and we'll work with the Parks Bureau on figuring out how to make that happen eventually.
Any other discussion?
A couple of questions.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. On the Tomahawk Island Drive property.
Yes.
I remember from the Hayden Island plan the desire of the neighborhood to have a neighborhood park. Is this in an area that could possibly serve that purpose?
No. This is a tiny piece of property. Tom, if you'd point to the dot. It's a former pump. I believe it was a pump or a well house that's actually surrounded by somebody else's property. It is it's slightly bigger than your area, but not much. It's a very small, tiny
piece. So it's not that whole wooded area?
No. Or actually, Tom?
Yeah, actually,
the road, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, it's part of the road that comes out. The pump station itself, like I said, is not very big at all. We haven't there's a piece that eventually ties to the road. It's actually in the front yard of the harbor master's home.
So what's the significance of the red line on that?
That's the actual property.
That's the actual property line.
Boundary.
Would we be selling the whole property then?
Yes. In this case, it's so small, there's no actual market value to it. I mean, there's nothing we really can sell except to decommission that well and then have it part of the Harbor Master's facility.
Our intent would probably be to do a quitclaim deed to the Harbor Master.
Okay, thank you. And then the other question I had was regarding the
Willalatin.
Thank you, parcel, which I understand is in Forest Park.
It is, yes. It is surrounded by property owners on all four sides, none of whom are the Water Bureau. So it's a very small, it's over on this one. It's a very small square property. Here's the Willalatin tank. This green area is all our property. But this is, you can't see it on this, but there's a slight strip of land that we don't own, and then on the other three sides are all owned by the other property owners.
I see.
So it's entirely landlocked, and none of it is bounded by property owned by the city.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Unless there's additional discussion, unless someone has signed up to testify.
No one else signed up.
This moves to a second reading next week.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Please read the title for City Auditor Report 907.
Certify abstract of votes cast and proclaim candidates elected at the municipal nonpartisan primary election held in the City of Portland on May 18th, 2010.
Auditor.
Griffin Vallade. Welcome.
Very good.
Thank you.
I've been waiting for that.
Been practicing.
How do you do? How do you do?
He did good.
You
he
have did. More.
Yeah.
For someone slightly dyslexic, your name is beautiful, a beautiful and wonderful challenge.
Great. Always happy to oblige.
Thank you.
So this is amended, this is the abstract of votes for the primary election for the City of Portland. And I can answer any questions, I hope. If not, we'll call on Andrew Carlstrom, former elections officer for the city, who was not able to be here today. But I think it's pretty straightforward.
If we vote this down, does that mean that they cannot take their positions?
Well, two of them, maybe.
Okay, that's good enough.
That, by the way,
that's good enough. Just one. If I could,
just to show you how devoted to sustainability Commissioner Leonard is, that is actually a recycled joke, which I remember from 2 years ago. But it certainly gets better with age, Commissioner. And we appreciate the sentiment.
Although I was the object of it 2 years ago, so.
So I'd like to congratulate all of the winning candidates.
Very
Commissioner
good.
Fish, Commissioner Salzman, Auditor Griffin Vallade.
All right. I'll entertain a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
Anyone wish to testify in this matter? Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to accept the report? Item 907.
Fish.
Just want to state for the record that when I first saw this, I looked back to my earlier comments, and I did say on the record that if nominated, I would not run. If elected, I would not serve. Commissioner Leonard, would you give us a historical citation?
I'm happy to do so.
I want to say just on behalf of me, since I'm on this list, that it is an honor to serve on this body, and I'm certainly grateful that the voters allowed me to win this election in the primary without the necessity of a runoff.
And I want to acknowledge the three other people in my race who ran and attended forums and took time out of their lives to participate in the democratic process. And they made the process a better one. I'm honored to vote and pleased and probably conflicted out on this, but I'll, in any event, vote aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Saltzman, in order to Griffin Vallade, I'm happy that you are all reelected. I have to note that Commissioner Fish is 79.95%, I think gets rounded up to 80. I will certainly be doing so. And it, Commissioner Saltzman's 55% with many worthy opponents was also a significant endorsement of his service on the council. So thank you so much. Aye.
Adams.
I am very pleased to accept the abstract of votes that solidifies your continued service on the City Council. Aye.
Yay.
So approved. Can you please read non-emergency ordinance item number 908?
Clarify composition of police review board and applicability of code provisions.
Aye, welcome.
Auditor Griffin Vallade again, and with me today is Mary Beth Baptista, who is the director of the Independent Police Review Division in my office. So as we've moved through the process of making the changes that you approved on March 31st, we've found that there are some kinks in the works, and so we want to kind of smooth those out today, and we made two proposals here. So the first one is that we had anticipated that the new police review board would hear complaints filed after April 30th and thereafter. And it would be September before those would reach the police review board, and that, and it would take that amount of time probably to recruit and suggest for the council's approval the citizen members of the police review board and work out some of the other processes. But we did not define that process. And so this ordinance defines a practical process for moving from the two current boards, if you'll remember it's the performance board and the use of force board, to the police review board that you approved. It basically sunsets the current boards and sets a start date for the new board of September 1st, prevents a need for three concurrent boards in the interim, and again, it allows us time to recruit the citizen members for your approval. So that's the sort of the more housekeeping piece of it. And then it corrects what we view as an accountability gap. Keeps the direct supervisors as a voting member of the police board. They've always been a voting member of the police board. And it means that accountability remains for supervisor decisions. So I've asked Mary Beth to join me here to and help me to answer any of your questions. And we've also asked Chief Reese and other staff from the Bureau to be here in case you have questions of them.
Has the stakeholders group reviewed and do they agree with this?
They have not reviewed it yet, and they certainly could still.
So why are you moving forward with this now instead of waiting for that process regarding the specific changes? I understand the timing piece, but the
right.
specific changes.
I think we saw this as a pretty simple change, and that Chief Reese and command staff had made a compelling case about the negative impact of removing direct supervision input and pledged directly to me and to staff a commitment to accountability, and they have demonstrated that commitment through their actions and cooperation with us in terms of making the changes we need to make, shown good faith in their efforts to make the changes approved by council, and so there's that, and I was convinced that this actually was a stronger accountability piece, and Mary Beth and staff were convinced of that as well. Feel like as the elected official and bureau director in charge of this program, that that we, if we feel like that there need to be some changes, that we can bring those forward to you. Does not mean the stakeholder committee cannot review them and bring further recommendations to you at a later time. Just one more thing. So it was my understanding that the stakeholder committee was really to convene and come up with a set of consensus recommendations for you. And notwithstanding those recommendations, we have an obligation to manage this program. And so that's really my explanation for that.
So I want to add my own remarks that are complementary to what Auditor Griffin Belaid has just said, because I introduced the ordinance. When we drafted this ordinance, it was done with less than cooperation from the police bureau and the police union. So oftentimes we were left trying to figure out what the right thing to do was rather than being told what the right thing to do was. With the change in administrations, there has been a sea change in approach to issues such as this. And what Auditor Griffin Belaid referred to as more assistance from the Bureau, very politely, I would say, is more akin to partnership and a desire to embrace not only these changes, but even other changes that we're discussing in the stakeholder group. And I think it's important for me to be flexible enough, as the auditor is, so that when we have true partnerships from both sides and where they make reasoned arguments about what would work best or what may not work best, is to give them the benefit of the doubt. And in this case, I think what we're doing is giving the Bureau the benefit of the doubt, because they've made reasoned arguments, which I would allow Chief Reese to articulate for himself rather than me. But after he came on board, there were reasons given that neither the auditor or I or Mary Beth had been given the insight into that made sense. And we want this to work, and we want the Bureau to continue to embrace this, because you know what I've learned in government, whether it's the state or here, you can pass whatever law you want, but if the bureaucracy doesn't embrace it, they can make it very difficult. And this is an attempt to have all sides work to make this work as well as possible, to give adequate oversight and to create this sea shift change in the approach the Bureau takes to being transparent. And I want to reward that and acknowledge that.
If I may respond to the what I think you're getting at with the stakeholder committee was that you wanted some sort of public input and public process on this particular piece. Is that correct?
Well, yes, and my understanding that the stakeholder committee was convened precisely to make these kinds of recommendations, so I was just wondering why this one was coming earlier.
I would just have to say, as the author of the resolution that came before council, that is not why they were convened. They were convened to make further recommendations on areas other than this, including the CRC and other issues that are out there. This truly, in my view, is a housekeeping, nuanced change that addresses an issue raised by the Bureau that does not affect oversight, that does not affect transparency, that does not affect the independent review office's ability to make independent investigations. This is what I would call a sub-nuanced level.
Thank you for the clarification.
But I do want to point out that, and I know that I've been privy to CopWatch's emails and other information that's been sent to you all about this, and I know that it's been pointed out that there was a 2003 recommendation from the Park Report relating to this, and I just want to clarify what that 2003 Park recommendation was. It was that the commander be a non-voting member in officer-involved shootings and in-custody deaths, and there was really specific reasons for that. And when you actually look at the 2003 Park Report, their recommendation was that in all other cases that there's good reasons to have the commander actually be involved and be the voting member. And on the public process piece, the 2003-2006 Park Reports were just recently reviewed by the Citizen Review Committee. They spent 2 years going through every single one of those recommendations, and they have just recently written a report based on that in-depth review and gave very specific recommendations regarding the board, and you'll notice that that was not one of them. And this report all of the work group meetings were open to the public. This report was presented to the Citizen Review Committee in an open meeting. We actively solicited feedback, and then again was voted and accepted on. And so when you think about whether or not the public has had any time to weigh in, they certainly have through the Citizen Review Committee.
And also, this is done in the context of tremendous change in the Police Review Board and our participation and our oversight role. And Mary Beth will be there to monitor, and we will be there to monitor and track the effectiveness of this. And if we are concerned, either because of that ongoing monitoring or because of the outside expert that I have committed to bring in 1 year after implementation, then we'll be back in this room to ask for a different.
Additional council discussion for this panel, including Auditor LaVon Griffin-Vallade.
Oh, you're so good.
Anyone signed up to testify?
Dan, he didn't sign
Hanneman,
up.
Okay. Welcome back.
Morning, Mayor Adams and Commissioners Fritz and Leonard. I'm Dan Hanelman with Portland Cop Watch. We co-authored a letter to all of you and to the auditor and to John Campbell, who's overseeing the stakeholder group, with another member of the stakeholder group appointed by Commissioner Leonard, with members of the National Lawyers Guild and the League of Women Voters, raising concerns about particularly the process by which this change is being made. But I also want to call attention to the substance of the change that's being proposed here. And again, the timeline is a housekeeping issue. We're not objecting to that. The substance of what we are looking at here is that this police review board, which is not open to the public and whose members have never had a public forum to speak to the public about what they do when they decide on whether or not an officer should be disciplined on one hand, the performance review board currently, or when there's been an officer-involved shooting or a death in custody on the other hand, when those members are having a discussion and debate and then voting on the outcome of those cases, whether the commander who supervises the officer in question on a daily basis should be given the power to vote on the outcomes of those findings. And the previous model allowed that commander to vote, which the Park report clearly says is a conflict of interest in those cases where there's a shooting or death in custody involved. And they say it's a second bite of the apple. They said this in 2003, and they repeated it in the 2006 report. But they didn't repeat it as a new recommendation, which is why the CRC's report didn't address it. So it was very disingenuous of the director to say the public has had a chance to weigh in on this. For that reason, A, it wasn't one of the recommendations that was being reviewed by CRC, and B, this the way the ordinance was written, the people in the community supported it because it was the commander who's not supervising that officer who was going to be voting the way that you have voted in this ordinance on March 31st. And now you're planning to change that without running it through the community. The only people who have had input here are the IPR, the auditor, and the police bureau. There has been no citizen input on this change. We don't get to see what happens at these boards. We don't get to know the outcome of these boards. I urge you not to make this change without letting the stakeholder group talk about it.
Well, there's a couple points that I think need to be addressed. I mean, to discuss this change as distinct from the wider change in the police review board, I think, is unfair and equally disingenuous. I mean, this is a brand new composed board that includes the IPR director as a voting member, whereas before there were times when the police bureau argued she could actually not even be in the room. So there's that. She's been voted in as a member, and I would argue that the community was less focused on the other compositions or the other board members that comprised the review board than this piece, which is significant. Two, the review boards no longer will be chaired by a member of the police bureau. They'll be run by a professional facilitator, which is unique in the history of the police bureau's handling of discipline. So there's that. Three, the auditor's office will publish each year or at some point throughout a year the votes that are taken and the issues addressed in the review board for the public to see, not with names attached, not with cases because they involve discipline, but the board itself is an entirely different creature than it used to be before, and intentionally so. The important part for me, Dan, is that where you raise legitimate points that need to be addressed and there isn't a good response to them, I think you need to be listened to. And I think I've demonstrated that I'm willing to do that. Where the police bureau is engaging and actually wants to be a partner and actually wants the process to work, when they're raising legitimate points, I think they need to be given equal treatment with you and other members of the community. And they've raised procedural issues related to this that I consider to be just that, procedural issues that don't, in my view, impact what will happen at the police review board, will not impact the IPR director's ability to vote and speak out at the police review board, and will not impact the substance of their recommendation ultimately to the police chief as to the discipline. And I want to make sure we're giving this new body every chance to succeed and do the things that you said you wanted, that I've clearly demonstrated I want out of the police bureau: more transparency, fairness, not just the community, but the officers involved in discipline. And I think that I hope you're recognizing we're moving down a continuum here where there's a lot more cooperation to address some of the issues you've rightfully raised in the past, and actually changes are happening that haven't happened in the past. And I think it's important to recognize that for all of us, including you, to recognize that.
That doesn't negate the fact that the only people who've had an input into this change are people inside the city government, and that not even the citizens involved in this review board have had input. And not to mention that there are other changes to the police review board that were recommended by the community that aren't being considered today because you've bypassed your own process by not bringing it to the stakeholder group. It is accurate. You knew about this Thursday morning last week. We didn't discuss it at the stakeholder group last Thursday morning. I commend the director of the IPR for giving me a heads up on this, which was very nice of her. She didn't have to do that. But there shouldn't be a substantive change to this ordinance that's not going through your stakeholder group. It's inappropriate.
Well, we disagree on whether or not this is a substantive change. I think it's a procedural change to make sure all parties are heard adequately, just as if you pointed out to me some glaring omission from the review board. I think we would need to address that before it took effect. So I think we just disagree as to the nature of this change.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Return to your seat, Commissioner.
Mayor, we have one more person who wants to testify.
Oh, okay.
Commander
who?
Dave Benson.
Okay. Commander Benson.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Dave Benson. I'm president of the Commanding Officers Association. I want to talk a little bit about these changes before you today. We are where we are, and from my association, we want these changes to IPR to work, to be functional. And to the first point on three boards running concurrently, as a practical matter, it really made little sense to me or to anybody in my group. To the second point on the RU manager or commander being a voting member, my members are the ones who manage the workforce, who supervise the workforce, and who know their people the best. When these cases come before the review boards, they have studied the case. They are in the best position to make the recommendation, and more importantly, to carry out the imposition and discipline, and to hold those people accountable after the review board occurs and after discipline's imposed. And not only is discipline imposed, but so these commanders can make sure the employee is making the necessary changes so those kind of behaviors, whatever they may be, don't happen again. And Commissioner Frentz, you made an excellent point about the stakeholders group. I'm a member of that group, and I embrace that group, but, you know, I see this, Commissioner Leonard, I think, spoke to it well. The stakeholders group was due to come up with new recommendations or other changes. I see this as a small administrative change. We're not changing the channel. We're just fine-tuning. And as we go along the way, there are going to be other little fine-tuning parts to this that we're going to have to make. And frankly, I don't think we can convene an entire committee every time we make small procedural changes to make this functional, to make it work, and to make it effective. And it's my intent and my members' intent to carry out the will of council and to carry out this ordinance with not only the word of the ordinance, but the intent of the ordinance. And so you have my commitment on that, and this was just to make it go more smoothly.
So I'm wondering why there wasn't a report to the committee at least on Thursday morning about this.
I can't speak to that.
Well, I can't. I participate in the committee meetings and have been present at each one and plan on being present at future ones. I did not consider this to be an issue before the committee because I do consider it to be an administrative change that is minor and does not involve the substantive changes that the Police Review Board is now charged with, and the sea change of transparency that will occur because of the brand new way we're handling the board. I mean, this is one member that will be on the board that the Police Bureau has argued they think is important and fair review of officer disciplines. And understanding that's one member out of a number of people, including communities, folks that are appointed by the auditor and the IPR director, it doesn't make to me, doesn't sound to me to be anything of significance at all.
Thank you, Commander Benson, for your testimony. I'd like to hear from Chief Reese as to why why it's not a second bite at the apple to have the supervising officer be on the board.
Thank you. I'm Mike Reese, the Chief of Police for the Portland Police Bureau. And specific to that point, most of these cases get to the Performance Review Board after the division commander has recommended a sustained complaint. So as Dave Benson said, the division commander reviews the case, makes a recommendation to the assistant chief of their branch, whether it's investigations, operations, or services, whichever branch the member is in, whether or not there's been a violation of policy. So, and then if it is a violation of policy and the discipline is more than command counseling or a letter of reprimand, we're going to send that to the Performance Review Board. So in terms of the second bite of the apple, most of these are already a sustained complaint that the division commander has recommended.
So the commander is actually an automatic yes vote?
I wouldn't say it's that there. It's a dynamic process in the Performance Review Board, and I wouldn't say they're an automatic yes vote, but the division commander is already has a feeling that there's a violation of policy. And whether or not that results in discipline or not, that's for the Performance Review Board. But I think there's some compelling reasons why we should have the division commander as a voting member.
And why not just add that person rather than substituting for the non-division commander?
Part of its workload issues. It's reviewing these cases, particularly the more complex ones. It's a monumental undertaking, and we've got a number of people already that are doing that, the assistant chiefs, the IPR director, internal investigators, the person's division commander, usually the lieutenant in the chain of command reviews it as well. Adding additional workload to a division commander who is busy doing their own managing of their division is a significant workload issue and may be a bargaining issue for us as well.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else wish to speak to this matter?
I have one other comment, and that is that we did get the letter from four members of the stakeholder committee, four appointees or stakeholders, so that's of concern to me. The other question that I have in looking at Exhibit A on page 3, where we're deleting, under B, we delete number 8, the RU manager, but then in number 2, the quorum still includes the RU manager. So I'm wondering if that is a different group or is that an error?
No, I wanted to make sure that you understand that one of the reasons why we're eliminating the rotating commander rather than just adding the voting members, one of the main community concerns we heard was that there need to be more parity on the board. And so if we were to add another police officer, that would have disrupted, and I think that would have been an area of community concern because we clearly heard that they wanted more balance. So that's why we've just replaced it so we could keep the numbers the same. And it's not a mistake. We think that we always have thought that an essential member of the board needs to be the reporting unit manager of that person. So we just kept that part of the quorum because we think that he or she is an essential piece.
But they're not an advisory member anymore.
No, they're a voting member. Oh, I'm sorry. So is it still written that they're a part of the quorum for advisory members? Then that is an error.
It says the RU manager is part of the quorum.
Part of the quorum for the board, yes.
And are you saying that the commander or captain is the RU manager?
Yes.
And why is it important for that person to be part of the quorum?
Well, that is, as the chief just pointed out, that is the commander who is advancing, usually advancing the sustained finding, is the key person that needs to be there in order to explain why it is they believe that there's a violation of policy. And in the reverse, in those cases where now, again, IPR has new authority to be able to controvert to send to the board, either on finding or discipline, we think that the RU commander is the essential person to explain why it is that they didn't find him or her out of the officer out of policy and why they made a decision not to discipline. So we feel like they need to be able to explain their positions on both sides in order for this to work effectively.
So I think this paragraph should actually say a quorum of six voting members, including two citizen members and the RU manager, and you still want four advisory members, since the RU manager is now a voting member rather than an advisory member.
I see what you're saying. Yes, we actually, that is correct. We need to fix that piece. That's right. So we should put three advisory members and then delete the including the RU manager.
Would you still want three advisory members then?
Yes.
So it would be three voting and three non-voting.
That's right.
Quorum.
I'm sorry. I see what you're saying.
And what's the significance, what was the significance before of having two voting members be necessarily part of the quorum and four advisory members?
Well, what our concern was is based that there was no quorum for advisory members. We took the quorum that currently existed.
Six voting members,
right.
I see.
And so we were concerned about the advisory member piece because of the experience that IPR had of trying to be excluded from a board, and we wanted to make sure that it was clear that advisory members have a place at the table and that they shall be there and that there needs to be a quorum of them.
I see. So do you want to make an amendment or bring it back next week with an amendment?
We can just do it orally now and then be sure that the paper is corrected for next week's vote.
Let's turn to our attorney.
The council can make an amendment since it's an ordinance. Anyone on the council can move for an amendment.
So can you articulate again what the amendment would be, Mary Beth?
That there be a quorum of six voting members, including two citizen members, and here's where the amendment would come in, that it says, and three advisory members is required to be present.
I so move.
But then deleting, second for the
yes, and deleting discussion. The line that says, including the RU manager or designee.
So you're not requiring that person to be part of the quorum?
Part of the advisory members.
Right. Didn't you just say that you want that person to be part of the quorum?
We should have done this in writing. That would have been easier for me. I'm sorry. You're right. A quorum of six voting members, including two citizen and the RU manager or designee.
If I might make a suggestion, since this isn't an emergency ordinance and since there has been concern expressed from four of the appointees to the stakeholder committee, and I certainly appreciate your description of what that committee is for and why you convene it, I'm sure you don't want to get them off track on process, feeling that they've been blindsided by this. And how often do you meet?
Won't meet again until July 1st.
Okay. I'm not seeing why there's an urgency to do this particular amendment right now. And if we were to do it again next week and allow for more testimony when people have more time, the process then could go more smoothly.
Well, the reason that we are advancing this now is because there requires great preparation for these boards to actually happen on September 1st, as everyone has wants them to be.
Would an extra week make any difference?
Well, we would be.
If you
well, we already are set to vote next week. That's true.
Right, but if you brought an amendment next week and then we voted on it the week after, would that make any material difference?
Well, I think we'd be getting into July. We have to do the recruiting. We have to set up the internal process of having the rotating commanders. We have to set up the training. I think that there's a lot to be done in a short period of time.
What if you did it next week with the amendment next week as an emergency ordinance, if my colleagues would be willing to do that, so we could pass it and it would go into effect immediately next week, but there'd be another opportunity for citizen testimony?
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay. Thank you.
So we will, unless there are objections, we will carry it over to next week. And legislative in process intent is that we will have an opportunity to read a written amendment
between now and then, and we'll vote on it and attach an emergency clause to it at that time, right?
And take testimony on the amendment.
The only concern, and I don't know the absence, I don't have the schedule, but that you're going to need, of course, four members, and I don't know who may or may not be here next week.
That's Carla. Good point.
Next week, just Commissioner Fish is out.
So fine.
And I will be out as well. But
I think we've had a very good discussion, and I appreciate the input. This will allow for citizen testimony, and it is sometimes hard to scramble and get a Wednesday morning off at short notice. So this will at least allow folks to send in testimony in writing. If we can get the amendment posted as soon as possible, and then that would give citizens a little more opportunity to testify in writing, if not coming in.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Moves to next week. And we are in recess until 2 p.m. tomorrow. Thank you.